This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Olösta fall. En podd om försvunna människor och ouppklarade mord. I juli 2020 blev vi kontaktade av ett spanskt filmteam som höll på att spela in en dokumentärfilm om Miguel Angel, mannen utan hjärta, som vi berättat om i 2 avsnitt av Olösta fall. Detta är ett specialavsnitt om min resa till Stockholm som jag gjorde för att träffa dokumentärfilmarna. Dokumentärfilmen som släpps den 29 april 2022 kommer heta Man Without a Heart och kommer gå att se på Discovery+. Lyssna gärna på våra avsnitt om Miguel Angel innan du lyssnar på detta bonusavsnitt. Det är avsnitt 60 och 61 av Olösta fall. Jag spelade in lite reflektioner när jag var på väg till Stockholm. Låt oss lyssna på det nu.
Hej på er allihopa, jag är på Kastrup i Köpenhamn och ska ta flyget till Stockholm alldeles strax. Och ja, allting började med för ett par veckor sedan, kanske 3 veckor sedan nu, då vi blev kontaktade av ett produktionsteam från Spanien som ska spela in en dokumentärfilm om Miguel Angel, mannen utan hjärta, som vi har tagit upp i podcasten. Och de vill gärna att vi ska vara med i den här dokumentären. För att vi tog upp fallet och att vi är en av få medier som faktiskt har pratat om det här fallet i Sverige. Så nu så ska jag upp till Stockholm och träffa dem. Och det känns lite märkligt. Jag har ju aldrig träffat dem på riktigt. Utan det har ju enbart varit videosamtal och lite telefonsamtal. Nu så ska jag då träffa dem på riktigt. Sofie kunde tyvärr inte följa med. Hon behöver vara hemma med Lycke, sin dotter. Men det ska bli så spännande att se vad det här kommer leda till. Särskilt så hoppas vi såklart på att Miguel Angels familj ska få lite mer svar om vad som hände honom, vad som orsakade hans död. Och ja, få de svar som de har letat efter helt enkelt. En liten side note är att allting är väldigt märkligt här på Kastrup. Det märks verkligen att det är väldigt få flyg som går. Jag blev ju vaccinerad för ett par veckor sedan. Så jag har inte behövt testa mig, men också ska man testa sig också för att komma in i Danmark. Och det är jättemånga butiker och så som stängt ner helt här. Säkert varit väldigt tufft för alla under corona. Det är lite märkligt att se med tanke på att det här är en flygplatsen vi alltid använder oss av när vi reser från Malmö. Som det är den närmsta stora internationella flygplatsen. Och som man känner igen det mesta, men allting ser helt annorlunda ut. Det är verkligen märkligt. Jag har ju inte varit här sedan 2019. Så det har hänt en del sedan dess. Jag checkar in igen med er när jag har landat i Stockholm. Jag kommer intervjua Ferhan Babar, som han heter, som är journalisten som är den som är bakom den här dokumentären som ska göras om Miguel Angel. Vi kommer träffas på EIKAs kontor och jag kommer intervjua honom om arbetet med dokumentären och Han är en av de journalister som har följt det här fallet alldeles från början. Så det ska bli väldigt intressant att höra hans perspektiv på det hela. Spännande, men vi hörs senare. Hejdå!
Hej, Nathalie här. Jag hade inte checkat in mer när jag landade för att det var full fart från... Ja, i princip när jag landade tills nu. Klockan är 22.15. Jag är tillbaka på hotellet. Det har varit en superintensiv dag. Men jättespännande att få vara med i en dokumentär. Vi besökte Acast kontor. Där vi fick sätta oss ner i en poddstudio. Och jag fick möjlighet att intervjua föran. Som är journalisten som har gjort den här, som gör den här dokumentären. Och gör allt det journalistiska arbetet bakom. Jag fick träffa alla bakom kulisserna. En screenwriter, 2 stycken som jobbar med foto, film, ljud. Och även producenten bakom dokumentären. Och så intressant att se all planering och allting som ligger bakom när man gör en dokumentär. Och där på Acasts kontor så fick jag möjlighet att sitta ner med Fern Barbar, journalisten, och ställa honom lite frågor. Så jag tänkte att vi sätter väl igång den här intervjun som jag gjorde med Fern. Han har egentligen följt det här fallet sedan 2013 tror jag det var, när han blev kontaktad av Miguel Angels syster. Som har kämpat något oerhört för att försöka få reda på sanningen i det här fallet. Så jag tänker att vi lyssnar på vad han har att säga helt enkelt.
Vi vill bara klargöra att alla åsikter som Ferran yttrar sig om i intervjun är hans personliga. Och han yttrar sig utifrån sitt perspektiv. De åsikter är inte nödvändigtvis något som vi bakom olika fall står bakom.
So nice meeting you and get to chat with you for our podcast Ola Stafal. And let's just start with introducing yourself. Like, who are you, your work as a journalist, and what you've been doing okay. This far?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me to be here with you. And well, my name is Ferran Barber. I'm from Spain. And let's say, to summarize, that I'm a journalist from Spain. I specialize in conflicts, international conflicts and social issues. I have made most of my job outside of Spain, I mean abroad. I have been working all of my life, maybe in, 50 or 60 countries. During the last years, after 2015, I have been especially working in Iraq and Syria. I have been covering events such as the fall of Raqqa or Mosul. And of course, this is not the first time I'm in Sweden to cover some information. I have been here several times before. It's a country that fascinates me in many ways. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you've been here also investigating like Miguel Angel's case before. And can you tell me a little bit about how you first... interesting in this case?
Well, actually, as I said, this is not my first time in Sweden as a journalist. My first time in Sweden as a journalist was in 2014. I have been previously as a tourist, let's say, right? Well, more than a tourist, because I used to have a Swedish girlfriend, so for personal reasons. But as a journalist, I came here for the first time in 2014. I was in Sweden researching the situation of immigrants for a foundation and trying to see what life is like, for instance, trying to see what life is like in what the right wing calls no-go zones. And in general, I was trying to find out how people live in the back room of the system. So that time I received a call from Blanca. Blanca is the Miguel Angel sister. and I felt an immediate interest in the matter. It is not the mystery that fascinates me, but the fight, the struggle of Blanca against the system, against the police, against the institutions, not only Swedish, but Spanish. And to me, it is the typical case in which the police lie, the police is lying, and try to cover their lies with more lies until they reach a point where the truth is not possible. Yeah, that's my point.
Mm. So we know that Miguel Angel traveled to Sweden, and that's everything happened here in the last, days of his life. What do we actually know about his time in Sweden?
Well, I have been investigating the Miguel Angel's case for 7 years now. So I have thought a lot about Miguel Angel and his trip, because it becomes more than a job. It's kind of obsession, right? Well, as you know, Miguel Angel had a psychiatric pathology, but did not make him an idiot or a person, how can I say, incapacitated for human relations, right? On the contrary, he was a smart guy, a very intelligent person. So I have imagined him many times leaving the Basque country, you know, the Basque country is in the north of Spain, very excited, thinking of Sweden. Well, I must say that he had a pension from the Spanish state and had money in his bank account. So he had money enough to make this trip. He wasn't a beggar or a homeless. He used to travel as a backpacker, right? We believe that it wasn't the first time that he visited Sweden, because we know that he had a P.O. box in your city, in Malmö.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. To be honest, we don't know why. We can speculate about it, but we have no idea. It is also possible that he knew a girl here before his last trip. And we have been able to trace his steps a bit and trace his journey thanks to the movements of his bank card. What we do know now is that Miguel Angel had a problem with the police on August 1st, 2005 in Karlstad, and that these policemen were the last known people to see him alive.
To see him.
Some days before, his bank cards had stopped working, so it's possible, I will say that it's for sure, that Miguel Angel began to get nervous and began, who knows, he could suffer some kind of crisis, mental crisis maybe, why not? I honestly believe that Miguel Angel was disappointed, felt disappointed for something. I believe that he didn't find what he was expecting to find during his trip to Scandinavia. And the additional fact that he was left without access to his bank account could compromise his mood and, as I say, perhaps his mental health. So it was under these circumstances that he called the Spanish embassy from Maristad to ask for help. He wanted to come back to Spain. Blanca, her sister, suspects that he could make this call from a hospital, maybe from a hospital. And Blanca does not rule that Miguel Angel was mistreated by the Karlstad police. But, of course, she's speculating. And basically, that's what we have about his journey.
So we don't know why he was in Mariestad. We only can speculate why.
No idea. We know that he had a problem in a bank office in Karlstad. That's why he was not arrested. He was under custody for, we don't really know how long, according to the police, 6 hours. According to us, at least 10 or 12, or maybe more than one day. Yeah. Next thing was this last phone call from Marista to the Spanish consulate. And the next thing was when the police found his body. We don't know if it's his body, really. Floating on the water, living in Stockholm.
Yeah, and when he was found in the waters there outside Lidingö, what was the condition of the body?
Well, regarding Maristad, as I said, we also know, thanks to the Spanish consular office, that a week after his arrest, I mean, on August 8th, the victim made this phone call to the Spanish embassy, as I said, And according to the official who spoke with Miguel Angel, the victim wanted to leave Sweden as soon as possible. He didn't feel good here for some reason. He had no money, maybe he had a bad experience, maybe he had some problem with the police in Karlstad. You remember that the Karlstad headquarters, there was another immigrant who died, Osmo Bayo, right? And this was the last known time that anyone heard Miguel Angel's voice. In fact, the Spanish official promised to help Miguel Angel and to help him to leave the country. Miguel Angel said that he will call them back, and he never did. So we don't really know what happened. And the next thing we heard about him was that he was found floating dead in Stockholm, leading a fjord. But we are not sure if it's him. Yeah. What was he doing in Mariestad? Well, Mariestad is the natural way from Karlstad to Stockholm. So
maybe he was on the way.
Yeah. So if he tried to go to the Swedish capital to return to Spain, it is logical that he crossed Mariestad, right?
However, that was also what he was asking about. He wanted to go home when he talked to the embassy.
Maybe. So, However, the victim's sister, I mean Blanca, suspects that he was able to make the call from a hospital. There is various evidence to support that idea. One of them is that pills were found next to his body.
In the water?
Yeah, in Lidingö. However, these pills were never identified by the police and disappeared in the Petra forensic exam. That's another mystery.
I did not know about the pills.
Yeah? No. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's what suggests us in a way that maybe he was in a hospital. Because he hated to take pills. Most of the psychiatric, people with psychiatric disorders hate to take pills because the pills change their personalities and So
his body was found in the waters after leaving here. So what was the condition of the body?
Well, the next thing we know is that a British citizen named Sarah Adams, that's what the police say, contacted the Lidingö police on September 22, 2005 to report the discovery of a body. And according to the police, the body was in an advanced state of putrefaction. So the police officers who came to the scene, and among them there was, I think he's famous here in Sweden, he's called Melin. He's the Camilla Laxberg ex-husband, right? And I think he's also a popular face on Swedish television, right?
Yeah.
So, according to this guy, the dead man had a wound on his right eyebrow. That wound, detected by this policeman, disappeared from the autopsy carried out by Petra Raston also. So, that's another mystery. She said that she couldn't identify any injury or anything because the corpse was in a very bad state. So, what the police and the coroner essentially maintain through different documents full of contradictions is that Miguel Angel committed suicide by jumping from the Lidingö bridge or from one of the boats that made the journey between Helsinki and Stockholm. And according to the post-mortem examination signed by Petra Rasten, the bus guy died by drowning. The police also did not rule out that Miguel Angel died by accident, but they were just speculating. And what is truly surprising is the way they acted from then on. No photographs were taken. A judge did not attend to this scene of the crime scene. The area wasn't cordoned off during the removal of the body. So it was a mess, a total mess. They decided in 30 minutes that it had been a suicide and the case was closed. In fact, Miguel Angel would have been buried as an anonymous corpse, if a Solna nurse with a Spanish origin roots, she's called Isabel Ferreceda. Well, she said that she was working that night in Solna. She took a look in his pockets when the victim was in the morgue. So it was she. This nurse, Isabel Ferraceda, who identified Miguel Angel and not the police, which is insane, totally insane. That's simply unacceptable. That's African style, right? And this is Sweden. This is not Zimbabwe, right? Yeah.
So, do we have any theories about what he was doing at Lidingö, if he actually was there? Or could it be that the body floated with the current from some other place, maybe, if in Stockholm, and ended up there? What's your thoughts about that?
Actually, that's a mystery, because as you know, we are now trying to go on researching the issue. I mean, right now, and one of the biggest questions I'm making myself every day is I can't understand what Miguel Angel was doing in Lidingö, because Lidingö is a very expensive suburb, a very expensive neighborhood. I mean, even we know he was broke, but it's obvious that homeless are not very welcome in Lidingö. Actually, begging is forbidden. It was the seventh neighborhood in Stockholm to provide the begging. So there, I can't find any reason. Even if he was also, if he decided to commit suicide, why to go to Lidingö? Why don't jump? Why don't I don't know? Go to the railway station. Actually, most of suicides here in Stockholm are committed in the railway stations. So, no, I have no idea. But there's one thing for sure. The police discard in 1 second the possibility of an homicide, of a crime. Why?
Yeah, that is something that we also see in a lot of other cases that we have covered on our podcast. Just the fact that some decisions are taken very fast. Because what we argue a lot about is that wouldn't it be better if they secure everything and then they decide? Because if they don't do that, everything gets lost, all the evidence, or, you know, that you could find in a crime scene.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, the body was never properly identified.
That's true.
And that is one big issue that we talked a lot about in the episodes we did about Miguel Angel. I think that is something that you could just take out from this case and it would still be like a scandal, because you should never bury someone or not identify a dead person in that way. You should do everything you can to identify them in the correct manner. What are your thoughts about that part of this whole
case? You are totally right. Actually, well, first, as I mentioned you, he was about to be buried as an anonymous person. Because the police didn't even check out his pockets, which is absolutely insane. But after that, when Isabel Ferraceda realized that this guy was from Spain and his name was Miguel Angel Martinez Santa Maria, the family sent from Spain a DNA test, but the Swiss police decided not to check it out. And so, yeah, it was a total mess. And now, you probably know we are here, we are now in Sweden, where we are planning to go to London because the family is not sure at all if the guy who was buried in London is Miguel Angel or any other person. So we are going to exhumate the family is going to exhumate the body, and we are going to make a third forensic exam. Because, as you know, there were a second forensic exam. The second forensic exam was made in England, and thanks to it, we found out that the body, I don't know if it's the Miguel Angel body or another person's body, was sent to England without a heart and a half of his liver. So now we are going to make the we're going to exhumate the corpse, and we are going to make a third forensic exam. I don't really know what kind of information we can get, because it's a long time since the body was buried, more than 15 years. Yeah. But we're going to try.
Maybe at least identification, for sure.
Yeah, actually, that's the first goal. You know, the Blanca's and Miguel Angel's mother died. I was with Blanca a few days ago in the Basque Country, and she told me my mother was very sad, but because she died without knowing for sure if the guy who was buried in London is Miguel Angel or any other person. So that's a mess, and it's really insane, unbelievable how sometimes the governments, not only the Swedish government, but the Spanish government, because this is not something between Spaniards against Swedish, because it can happen everywhere, right? How they treat sometimes the common people. Yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad. That's why I really love Blanca.
Yeah.
She's got a very special energy, and yeah, I love her a lot. She's got a very special kind of personality, but you need to be very, very strong to keep this struggle for long.
Yeah, so many years.
Yeah.
So many hurdles, so many.
Since the first second. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was actually one of my questions, if you're going to exhumate the body. And,
yeah.
And that's really good, I think, for the family, that it's finally being done and that they at least get that part answered. And if it's not Miguel Angel,
it will be crazy.
It will be, but I think, the biggest news ever.
We can't discard it. We're going to make another DNA test to the body. So we will know something maybe in September.
What is your thought? Do you think that it's him who is buried in London? Or what is your gut feeling telling
you? I don't really know it.
No.
But I think that, yeah. That the guy who was buried in London is Miguel Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as you said, it's just a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're working now on a documentary about the case. How long have you been doing it, and how has it been so far?
It's hard to tell how long we have been working, because we began to think about the documentary a few years ago, but the pre-production began maybe 4 or 5 months ago, and the production began maybe 1 month ago. And we are going to be working for maybe 3 more months. And then the documentary will be released in 120 countries. Sweden is one of them.
And I think it's so important, because this case really needs to get all the attention it can. And I think that's a great job that you're doing, to at least get it out there once and for all. Also outside Spain, I think. I think it's been covered quite a lot in Spain, but not enough here in Sweden. And I think also I think the family really needs the attention to the case. And we interviewed both Blanca and her brother when we were making the podcast. And I really feel like they deserve the answers. It's been so many years. At least know what happened to him. Why? What was the cause of death?
Actually, I want to ask you something. Why did you get interested about this case? Because as far as I know, just another Swedish media dedicated a report to this case. And that's weird for me. Why did you get interested?
We actually, it was one of our listeners who sent a link to an article about this case. I think it was a Swedish article, but it wasn't that much information in it. But it was mentioning the part with that he did not have a heart in the second autopsy. And that made us really interested in what is this case? It sounds really weird. It's happened here in Sweden. And then we just thought that this story is too interesting not to be told, more or less. And then we always have the perspective of the family. So we tried to contact his family and got this interview with the sister and the brother, and that was kind of how we released it. It's not an investigative podcast. It's just telling the story, what happened, and trying to get more attention. And I've tried also to help the Blanca get some contacts here in Sweden with some journalists, but it's been really hard, you know, to get the resources needed to really cover this case. So I'm really happy that now finally.
And what's your impression? Done. Your personal impression? Do you think that we be able of finally knowing what really happened, or not? That's an impossible goal.
Maybe. I think attention is one really good way, because if more people questions things, maybe on a political level, or someone will actually pay attention to this and expose what happened. Or I think it's a good way to start. So I'm really hopeful that at least you will get some answers. And then the exhumation of the body is really important, I think, as well. Just to end those questions for the family.
I'm just curious about what's your impression about the role of the police in this case?
Yeah,
the police really, and Petra, and the coroner.
It's really hard. We did cover that DN article on our podcast that questions kind of Petra's work. And it was an interview with her where she is answering some questions. But she really, the core thing is about what happened to the heart, because the heart was not there in London. And she has some explanations to it, but I've also read a lot that it has been also questioned that it cannot just disappear. So I think that it's very weird. And I think she is also a very respected coroner in Sweden, which also think makes it more complicated, because people are afraid to criticize her. That's my feeling, at least. I think that something has definitely not done correctly here, because it shouldn't happen like that. And if there was a mistake, it should be, it must, you know, you must own it. You must say, there must have been a mistake, because I put in the heart. If the heart is not there, then somewhere along the way, there must have been a mistake.
But do you think that we are dealing with an organ trafficking case, or maybe it's...
I don't know.
No idea.
It's because then it must have happened before, you know. Then it must have happened before he was in the autopsy room the first time, right? Because otherwise, you know, it can't be any way decomposed when you're going to deal with organ trafficking, right? So I think it's so complicated. I don't know what happened. And I think when it comes to the police, my feeling is that there is a reason why they are hard to get a hold of, why they don't want to answer questions about this case. It's not an open investigation. So that's not a reason. They don't even think that there's a crime behind it. So at least they could answer some basic questions about it. But they don't, and they don't want to. And that, for me, it's weird. I think it would be a lot better if they would at least answer questions. Because then why? That's the big question. Why won't you cooperate? Why won't you at least say your thoughts about it and what happened, even if it's an accident? So I think there was some mistakes done. I think the mistakes are around how the body was handled, how it was never properly the place where he was found was not properly investigated, or how do you say, secured. And I think that is something that comes up all the time in the cases that we cover. It's an issue, and it shouldn't be like that, because a lot of questions could be avoided by actually doing it right from the beginning.
And what about, you know, we have been trying to elaborate the different scenarios, and of course organ trafficking is just one of them. Could be there are different possibilities, right? But one of them, what about the illegal use of the organs for some kind of investigation without permission?
Yeah.
Does it sound logic for you?
I've never heard about it before, but I've read that it happens, that it's... I've also You sent me some links about the cases where people have lost their organs, or it has been discovered in second autopsies to people. So there is something weird going on, because that shouldn't happen. I think from a, how do you say, from a family point of view, how would you feel if your daughter or son died abroad, and when you get home, the body organs are not there? That is not right, I mean.
Actually, you know that this is everywhere. I mean, this is not a Spanish practice or a Swedish practice, everywhere. When you want to make a toxicologic or histopathologic exam, most of the times they need to take the whole organ and then they send it to the institution. And sometimes, and this is very frequent, the organ, they don't put the organ back, especially if you must send the body to repatriate the body to any other country. But the thing here is that Petra denies that she had forgotten to put the organ back, so...
Yeah, she says that she took small pieces to test.
Exactly, and that was tissue. It.
And then it was put back.
I really expect to see her. That's another of my goals. Unfortunately, she's always on vacation when I come here. And this is my third or fourth time. But maybe this time.
Yeah, I think that would be good, at least for her to get her side of the story straight to you. And because, of course, you're going to have to talk about the heart and the issues with the autopsy. If you're doing a whole documentary about this case, you have to address that big issue, and she is the one you should talk to if you have anything around that.
Actually, it would be great to listen to her version of the facts, you know. So we will see. Maybe we are lucky.
Yeah. I really hope so, because I think that would be the best.
Så det var den intervjun. Vi har pratat om ganska många olika bitar som ni hörde. Och efter att vi hade varit på kontoret så åkte vi faktiskt till Lidingö, den plats där kroppen hittades. Platsen ligger precis när man har kört över Lidingöbron. Man kommer från centrala Stockholm, kör över bron. Så ligger platsen alldeles precis till höger om bron. Där finns lite stenar som går ut från vattnet och en pytteliten strand. Och vi promenerade faktiskt, så man kan inte köra bil hela vägen fram. Man kan köra bil en bit fram, parkera och sen gå på en slags gångstig under bron liksom. Och då kommer man till den här lilla öppningen. Det är som en liten glänta kan man säga, en väldigt, väldigt liten strand. Och det ska alltså varit på den här platsen som kroppen hittades. Enligt en karta som polisen har i utredningen, och de har pekat ut platsen. Och det ska ha varit en brittisk kvinna som man aldrig har lyckats lokalisera i efterhand. Under allt arbete med dokumentären, men även tidigare. Hon har aldrig blivit intervjuad i någon tidning eller så. Men hon ska i alla fall ha på något sätt promenerat där eller sett kroppen. Jag vet inte om det var från avstånd eller om hon gick relativt nära. Hon var inte riktigt säker på vad det var hon såg, men kontaktade polisen. För att hon misstänkte att det kunde vara något, ja, som det nu var en kropp. Polisen kom dit. Och det vi inte visste när vi spelade in avsnittet om Miguel Angel var att den polis som kom först i platsen, det var två poliser. Och den ena av dem var faktiskt Martin Melin. Den här kända. Kanske den mest kända polisen vi har i Sverige. Han var ju känd redan då. Han var med i Robinson 1992 eller någonting, men början av 90-talet. Och detta skedde ju 2005. Så han måste ha varit ett känt namn redan då. Och han är alltså polisen, en av dem som är fast på platsen. Och som kunde rapportera om att det var en kropp avliden man som antagligen har legat i vattnet en tid, har de skrivit. Och också skrivit att Det fanns en del tydliga skador på kroppen, bland annat vid ögonbrynet. Produktionen har försökt kontakta Melin för en kommentar och jag vet inte om han kommer höra av sig till dem. Det verkar som de har i alla fall en initial kontakt. Så man kan ju hoppas att han vill vara en del av dokumentären och om han minns vad som hände. Hade det ju varit väldigt intressant att höra med hans egna ord hur det var att hitta den här kroppen. Men det som slog mig generellt sett när jag var på platsen var att det var liksom en gångväg ner till vattnet. Vilket jag också poängterade ut när vi var där. Det kändes nästan lite som att om man känner till området, kanske har gått där förut eller på något sätt bor i området eller liknande, så skulle man kanske veta om att det var liksom en gångväg ner till vattnet där. Att det skulle vara om man ville slänga in en kropp i vattnet, så skulle det kanske vara faktiskt den perfekta platsen. För det ligger lite undangömt, borta från bilar och liknande. Eftersom det bara är en gångstig där och man inte kan köra hela vägen fram. Men det kräver ju också att man vet om platsen, tror jag. Det är ingen plats man bara springer på när man letar efter ett ställe sådär. Men om man då skulle ponera på att det har varit ett mord som har skett, så tänker jag att då har den nog legat där ett tag på platsen innan den hittades. De teorierna som rättsläkaren i fallet hade var ju att Miguel Angel ska ha hoppat från antingen bron eller en båt. Det är lite olika tankar som vi diskuterar idag, jag och Ferran. Nummer ett är, bron är ganska tungt trafikerad. Det är klart, hade han hoppat om natten kanske hade det inte varit lika mycket bilar. Men hade det varit på, om man säger, dag eller kväll, så tror jag att det nästan oundvikligen hade varit något vittne som hade sett honom. Och sen tänkte vi också på att det går en tåg eller en tunnelbanetåg precis under bron. Hade man då inte, om man var i sådana tankar, kanske hellre hoppat framför ett tåg? Jag vet inte. Det är kanske det mest vanliga när man tänker på självmord. Sen tänkte jag också på att strömmen verkar gå i motsatt håll från bron. Den här lilla platsen där kroppen hittades på ligger liksom uppströms, om man säger så. Så det känns lite otroligt att om man hoppade i vattnet från bron, att han skulle hittas där. Då skulle nog hittas på andra sidan av bron. Det är bara min egen magkänsla när jag såg platsen. Båtteorin tycker jag nog är den minst troliga. Det baserar jag på nummer ett. Du måste identifiera dig för att gå på en båt. Den teorin hade man kunnat undersöka ganska tydligt om han har gått på en båt eller ej. Vittnen där igen. Det hoppar ju personer från båtar, det händer ju. Men det är väldigt sällan det händer obemärkt. Oftast är det någon som ser det. Det är ganska mycket människor på de här stora Finlandsfärjorna, kryssningarna som går där i Värtahamnen. Men en sak till, han hade inga pengar. Han hade cirka 50 kronor eller någonting i den stilen på sig när han hittade stöd. Inget kort. Det hade han kastat själv. Tydligen där när han gick på motorvägen i Norge när han verkar inte mått bra psykiskt och polisen stoppade honom. Så ska han ha kastat sitt pass och sitt körkort. Eller sitt, vad säger jag? Sitt pass och sitt kontokort. Det har polisen själv sett och plockat upp efter han hade tagit sig från platsen. Så han hade ju heller inget kort och det var ju på grund av det han hamnade i hela den här situationen i Karlstad, för han hade inget kort. Så han kunde inte hämta ut pengar. Han hade pengar på banken men han kunde inte komma åt sina pengar snarare, och han hade ingen identifikation. Förutom den här kopian som han hade i fickan när han hittade stöd. Så han kunde inte hämta ut sina egna pengar på banken. Så när han hittade stöd i Lidingö så hade han ju varken pengar i form av kort eller kontanter till att liksom kunna köpa en biljett. Det kostar ändå en del att köpa en biljett till ett kryssningsfartyg. Och det menar man på då Ferran. Jag pratade lite med honom och det menar han på. Det känns inte så troligt att han skulle ha råd med det. Och jag faktiskt så faktum är att han utan pengar och ja, inte mådde bra psykiskt. Kanske liknade en hemlös person. Fastän han inte var det och han hade pengar egentligen. Så tror jag till utseendet att han skulle säkert kunna misstas från en hemlös person. Kanske flykting, något i den stilen. Och det har vi varit med om förut i podden. Att personer i de här kategorierna, framförallt då hemlösa eller till exempel alkoholister eller personer som har drogberoende eller liknande, att de i större grad råkar ut för att ens fall inte tas på allvar, initialt i alla fall. Och sen när man väl tar det på allvar så är det för sent.
Tack för att du har lyssnat på detta specialavsnitt av Olösta fall.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.